You guys, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books was nominated for a Webby Award, which is this really prestigious award that I am dying to win. And there's a People's Voice component, and you can vote and get me from number two, second place, to first place. But you have to vote. Please go to vote.webbys.com. Vote.webbys.com, but it's kind of complicated, so it might be easier just to go to zibbyowens.com or my Instagram at zibbyowens, where it'll always be in my stories and it's in one of those little circle highlights. Please, please, please vote. Voting ends April 18th and I'm in second place, so please vote for best individual episode, talk show, interview show. Thank you so much.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Zibby Owens, and you're listening to the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. I'm also the host of Moms Don't Have Time to Lose Weight, and I'm the editor of the anthology, which you should run out and buy, called Moms Don't Have Time To, a quarantine anthology. All proceeds of that book go to COVID-19 vaccine research. And I'm the editor-in-chief of Moms Don't Have Time To Write, a new publication on Medium, and we're accepting submissions, so please send your personal essays there. And if all that isn't enough, you can follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens, and my website is zibbyowens.com. Okay, now back to this amazing podcast. Pam Jenoff is the author of The Woman with the Blue Star, and she and I had this conversation as part of the Peloton Moms Book Club, which you should definitely check out if you haven't already. Pam is the author of several books of historical fiction, including the New York Times bestsellers The Lost Girls of Paris and The Orphan's Tale. She holds a degree in international affairs from George Washington University and a degree in history from the University of Cambridge. She received her JD from University of Pennsylvania. Her novels are inspired by experiences working at the Pentagon and as a diplomat for the State Department handling Holocaust issues in Poland. She lives with her husband and three children near Philadelphia, where she teaches law. Her current bestseller is The Woman with the Blue Star, which is a riveting tale of courage and unlikely friendship during World War II.
All right. Well, it's 7 o'clock and I see some of the moms showing up. So I just wanted to welcome everybody to the Peloton Moms Book Club virtual author chat with Pam Jenoff for The Woman with the Blue Star. And it is being special guest hosted tonight by Zibby Owens. Thank you, ladies, for coming. And I'm going to take a quick moment to introduce Zibby. For those of you who don't know Zibby, she is the creator and host of the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. And it's been one of Oprah's favorite podcasts for 2 years in a row. She's the CEO and founder of the Moms Don't Have Time To. She's formed her own media company and has multiple podcasts. She did an anthology about moms don't have time to during the quarantine of COVID. She has, I believe, another anthology coming out this November. She does all of the things. She has her hands in all of the pies, and she does a lot of things with Good Morning America and gives great book recommendations. So we hope that you guys will check out her podcast in the future. And with that, Zibby, welcome.
Thank you. Wow, my hand in all the pies. You must have been in my, you could have been in my kitchen earlier today. Like, were there secret cameras? Anyway, thank you for that. And thanks for having me at the Peloton Moms Book Club. I was much more active on my Peloton and have really gotten off the beaten path. And I don't know, I noticed that my dog's water bowl was on there, you know, the other day. And I'm like, I wonder how long it's been there. Anyway, I am thrilled to be interviewing Pam Jenoff tonight, whose book was absolutely amazing, The Woman with the Blue Star. And I'm so excited to talk to her about that tonight. And this will become a podcast on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books, just letting you know that, but not the Q&A, just this part. So I will read Pam's bio from her website. Here, Pam, say hi before I launch into everything. There she is. Pam Jenoff was born in Maryland and raised outside Philadelphia. She attended George Washington University in Washington, D.C., and Cambridge University in England. Upon receiving her master's in history from Cambridge, she accepted an appointment as special assistant to the Secretary of the Army. The position provided a unique opportunity to witness and participate in operations at the most senior levels of government, including helping the families of the Pan Am Flight 103 victims secure their memorial at Arlington National Cemetery, observing recovery efforts at the site of the Oklahoma City bombing and attending ceremonies to commemorate the 50th anniversary of World War II at sites such as Bastogne and Corregidor. Is that right?
Very good. Very good.
Oh, thank you. That's like 10 years of French in school for nothing. Anyway, following her work at the Pentagon, Pam moved to the State Department. In 1996, she was assigned to the U.S. consulate in Krakow, Poland. It was during this period that Pam developed her expertise in Polish-Jewish relations and the Holocaust. Working on matters such as preservation of Auschwitz and the restitution of Jewish property in Poland, Pam developed close relations with the surviving Jewish community. Pam left the Foreign Service in 1998 to attend law school and graduated from the University of Pennsylvania. She worked for several years as a labor and employment attorney, both at a firm and in-house in Philadelphia, and now teaches law school at Rutgers. Pam is the New York Times bestselling author of The Woman with the Blue Star, The Lost Girls of Paris, The Orphan's Tale, The Commandant's Girl, The Diplomat's Wife, The Ambassador's Daughter, The Last Summer at Chelsea Beach, The Winter Guest, The Things We Cherished, Almost Home, and A Hidden Affair. She also authored a short story in the anthology Grand Central, Original Postwar Stories of Love and Reunion. She lives outside Philadelphia with her husband, three children, dog, cat, lizard, and bird. So, welcome, Pam.
Thank you. Thank you for the warm introduction. And I'm such a fan, Zibby, of your podcast and everything you do and all of your lists and everything. It's just you're a force, and we're so grateful, all the authors.
So. Oh, thank you so much.
As well as a reader, a consumer.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I am a fan of yours too. And, you know, consumed this at rapid speed. I absolutely loved it. And I haven't really stopped thinking about some of the images in the book that have really sort of been haunting me that you described in such detail. But why don't you tell, I'm not sure who in the book club actually read the book, and a lot of people have their, you know, their videos off, so I can't see a show of hands. All right, well, Sue read it, so that's good news for all of us. Sue and Lauren, all right, Barb, great. So for those who might not have read it, would you mind giving a brief overview of the book? And then I want to hear about what inspired you to write it.
So can I do the second part by way of lead-in? So let me tell you what inspired me to write it, which will set the stage for the story. Is that okay?
You know what? You do however you want. I'll just be here.
So The Woman with the Blue Star came out May 4th. It's my 11th book. And I write a lot of books set around World War II and the Holocaust, material that I've worked with for about 25 years from when I was a diplomat. And I'm happy to say more about that if folks want. But I have a deep love for the era. But the stories I write, they don't come from my personal experiences or even really people that I met. They come from stories that I find when I'm researching and I'm kind of looking for, what am I going to write about next? And so when I'm looking for an idea, I'm looking for the gasp. I'm looking for the moment. Because if something will make me gasp after all these years of working with the war, then I'm hopeful I'm on to something that readers will feel the same way about, that will illuminate, that will teach and inspire, that we really haven't heard about before. In this case, for The Woman with the Blue Star, the gasp was the discovery of a group of Jewish people in Lviv, Poland, who survived World War II by hiding in a sewer. And I don't mean that they hid in that sewer on their way out of town. They hid and lived in that sewer for more than a year. And hearing this, I had so many questions. Who were these people and how had they survived and what were their lives like and who had helped them? And I was particularly taken from an anecdote from the true story. I don't write true stories, but an anecdote from the true story in which a young girl looked up through the sewer grate and she saw a girl her own age buying flowers. And she was so taken by the disparity between her life and the girl above. Her mother said to her, "Someday there will be flowers for you." It was this kind of promise. And so when I heard that, I imagined what would it have been like if the girl below and the girl above had the chance to get to know one another, and what would that have meant for both of their lives? So that's a very long introduction to say that The Woman with the Blue Star is about Sadie. She's a young Jewish woman who is living in the sewer, hiding with her parents, although she increasingly becomes isolated. And one day she looks up and she sees Ella on the street. Now, Ella is not Jewish. And at first glance, Ella has it pretty good. She's from an affluent family. She's not being persecuted. But when we look closer, we see that Ella has lost all of her family except for her really horrible stepmother, who is consorting with the Germans, and her ex-fiancé, who hasn't even told her that he's back from the war. And so Ella has this really deep loneliness and need. And when she sees Sadie through the sewer grate, there's a very powerful connection between them.
Wow. Well, the image of the flowers and that moment, I mean, the whole thing was just so random. It's almost hard to comprehend, right? That two people living on opposite sides of town could have such divergent paths and sort of have to face off with just this barrier between them and the lengths to which people will go. I mean, it was amazing, these stories of survival and the way that you put us sort of in that moment at the time and everything. And it's also such a great show of female friendship and what people are willing to do for each other. So tell me a little bit more about developing that relationship between the two girls and how you made that believable and how you treated that and, you know, how to get people who are to relate and yet have it work so well on the page.
You know, one of the things I love best about historical fiction is taking women who through normal history would have walked on a very set path, and suddenly through war or catastrophe, they are thrown off that path and they're tested and challenged in ways that they never thought possible. And it's really fun to see how they grow and respond in those situations. And one of those parts that's super fun is taking women who through normal circumstances never would have met, never would have crossed paths, but because of the war, they do, and seeing what happens with them. Now, specifically with Ella and Sadie, I like to keep it very real. So if you read the author's note for The Woman with the Blue Star, you will know that I turned in a clunker of a first draft. I mean, after 11 books, I handed in a book and my editor was like, "No." I'm like, "No?" Like, "No." And so I had to rewrite this book in 5 months. And part of what changed was my first draft was only from Sadie's point of view. It was only the girl in the sewer. And it was my genius editor, who's always right, who said, "We need to see Sadie's point of view and Ella's point of view." So that's how it kind of evolved. And I wasn't sure. It was difficult to open up to Ella.
I know. I loved in your note how you were like, "Yeah, like we're going to go there." You had something funny you said, like, "Yep, not going to lie. Like this is really what happened."
Oh, so true.
So after 11 books, like take us back to the beginning of how did you start writing historical fiction? Like what appealed to you about the genre and how did you sort of tackle the first book and keep getting better and better until we end up with these really vibrant characters today?
Thank you. So I was one of those little kids who always wanted to be a writer. And it was always novels, like never short stories, never poems. I was like, "I'm going to write a book. I'm going to write a book." And then all through those many years when I lived in Europe and I went to school, I had plenty of time to write, but I never got started. You know what I mean? Like you've got this project, you want to get off the ground and you can't. And it was always the novel for me. I had lots of novels shoved in drawers. And the turning point in my life was actually 9/11. I had worked for the State Department, and I came back from the State Department, and I went to law school. And I graduated from law school in Philadelphia, and I started working at a big law firm on September 4th, 2001, right? So it's a big deal. It's coming up this week. And 1 week later, I started on a Tuesday. One Tuesday later, 9/11 happened. I was sitting at my desk at a law firm. And I love attorneys. I make baby lawyers. I teach law school. Like, that's what I do. I think it's a wonderful profession. But that was the moment when I said, I have a deeper dream of being a novelist. And if I don't get started, like, I could have been a 9/11 victim. It never would have happened. And so it was that life mortality moment. And I took a course at Temple Knight School in Philadelphia. Now, I teach at Rutgers, but this course was at Temple. And the course was actually called Write Your Novel This Year. And I started to work on a book. And I didn't set out to write historical fiction. I started out with two first chapters in that workshop. One was a historical and one was a present day. And people responded more to the historical. And so that became my first book, The Commandant's Girl. So I started in that writing workshop, which was a wonderful experience. But just because I joined a workshop didn't mean I was like off to the races. It was 5 years and 39 publisher rejections, you know, before I got accepted on that first book. And bear in mind, I was a new attorney at a big law firm. I had $1,000 a month in student loan debt. So I couldn't just go be a writer. So I used to write the books from like 5 to 7 in the morning before I went to the firm. So that was kind of how it all came together. But I will tell you, I always read a lot of historical fiction growing up. So maybe it was fated, you know? So.
Wow. People talk about how crazy it is to work at law firms and how you have no time to yourself. So, you know, that is so all-encompassing that the fact that you could do it simultaneously is particularly impressive. So why did you not give up after 48 rejections?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLaughlin. Jay McLaughlin is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLaughlin and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLaughlin stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLaughlin's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLaughlin's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern. And the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLaughlin. And so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLaughlin is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20. Capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital Z Zibby 20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white, open, long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLaughlin. Thanks so much.
Hey, grown-ups, the Cat in the Hat cast is a new podcast from Wondery, perfect for the whole family. Join the Cat in the Hat and your favorite Dr. Seuss characters as they get whisked away on a new adventure every week. Fish dreams of creating his very own polite and quiet podcast. That is, until he gets a surprise visit to his Fishbowl podcast studio from the Cat in the Hat himself, and it becomes very clear that the cat has other plans for the podcast, and those plans are the opposite of quiet. The cat may be disruptive, but it turns out he's also a great help to get Fish out of all kinds of predicaments. Bursting with music, silliness, and rhymes, the Cat in the Hat cast encourages us all to find fun that is funny in every episode. So sing along to new favorite songs, try your luck at Titanic tongue twisters, have some fun with wondrous wordplay, and most importantly, bring your family along for all of the adventures in the Cat in the Hat cast. Follow the Cat in the Hat cast on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to the Cat in the Hat cast ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Wondery Kids Plus in Apple Podcasts.
Well, you know what happened? So we submitted my first book, Commandant's Girl, everywhere, and we get all of these rejections. And then the agent I worked with at the time, he said, well, go write another book and we'll sell that one first. And then we'll kind of bootstrap this in. And I was like, as if it were that easy. But I'm diligently working on another book for 11 months. And on April 8th, 2005, I was at the firm. It was a Friday afternoon. And the caller ID pops up on my work phone. And you know, even then people emailed. It wasn't all phone calls. So I picked up the phone. It was my agent. And I said, are you calling to fire me? Because this poor guy had not made a dime off of my work. And he said, no. And then I thought he was calling to yell at me for not finishing that second book. And he said, no. He said, I'm calling to tell you I sold the first book. And it turned out that one publisher that we didn't even know was still reading it made a tiny little offer for Commandant's Girl. And off we went. But I don't know. I honestly believe that the only difference between me and anyone who's not published, you know, is largely just keeping going. Because in that original writer's workshop, there were many better writers than me. And that's not modesty. I'm being straight up. There were some great writers in that workshop. And I think sometimes that the only reason I'm here is just because I kept knocking.
So. Well, I mean, if you're like a salesman trying to sell milk and it's spoiled milk, it doesn't matter how many doors you knock on.
Analogy.
Right? No, I mean, you have to have something.
No, it's true. I mean, I didn't just keep knocking. I kept doing 5 a.m. But, you know, it was definitely that more perspiration than, you know, however Ben Franklin says it, more perspiration than inspiration. I don't know.
Wow. So you started on your journey, you got that published. And then fast forward to today, when you wrote all those other books along the way, was it still those anecdotes every so often and just the stories that you happened to find and hear and you kept taking them and then all of a sudden now you've written like, you know, two handfuls of books and it's amazing.
You know, so I started with Commandant's Girl and I actually wound up writing a sequel and a prequel to that book and that was really fun. And then, you know, I wrote a couple modern books. I wandered around a few different publishers. Like I sort of had a long and winding road, but I always came back to World War II and the stories. And there were always stories. And there are moments like, look, there are moments when we've looked at it and I've said, is World War II played out? You know what I mean? Like I will tell you honestly, it was right after The Nightingale by Kristen Hanna mm-hmm. and All the Light We Cannot See by Anthony Doerr. And those two
so
books,
good. Yeah.
Both of those books were
both
so
good. Both of those were so good. Yeah.
And I looked around, I'm like, well, it can't be done any better. Like, how do we do this? I looked around, but then there were still stories to be told and a great appetite with readers. And so, but you know, some of my books have been modern. I wrote one book that was set on the home front during World War II, which I particularly love. It's called The Last Summer at Chelsea Beach. And then I'm back to stories during the war. And it's always, you know, it's just that little nugget of history that sets me off. If I think it's amazing and I can do it respectfully, then that's kind of where I start.
Did you ever think about this being YA or middle grade or anything? Because you know how sometimes when you have a protagonist who's younger, now all of a sudden that means you're like in the YA category. Yeah. This is maybe too talking shop situation, but
no, it's true.
No, because I read part of this out loud to my daughter who's 8, but she likes me to read whatever I'm reading that night to her before we go to bed. And you know, not to say it's for an 8-year-old, obviously, it's like a lot of complex themes and everything. But you know, she was really interested because it's someone close to her age going through something. So I don't know if you would consider
it. No, it's a good point. So I actually, my favorite books are kids in YA because I think those authors are just deities. I like 25 years ago, I worked at Borders for a summer and I was like, I please work in the YA section? I love those books. I don't have the voice for kids in YA. And so for some reason, my protagonist tend to be younger. They tend to be that age of women. I don't like genre. When Commandant's Girl came out, Publishers Weekly called it historical romance at its finest. And I was like, romance? Like, it doesn't have a romance. So I don't really always love the genre thing, but my books can be read by YA. It depends on the parent's sensitivity. So one of my 11-year-old twins has read like 3 of my books already, and that's fine. They're very PG-13. Like, there's not a lot of graphic anything. I write my books so that my mom can read them. So I think it's okay. Most of them are pretty okay for the younger set, but I'm happy if they read them. Yes.
And did you, like, where was your family around World War II? Like, what's your personal story?
So interestingly, all 4 of my grandparents are from that, you know, area known as the Pale, and that kind of Poland, could be Ukraine, could be Russia, you know, based on what year it was, right? And when I lived in Poland, I was there for almost 2.5 years, I would always try and take trains east to see where my family was from. It was very, very difficult. All of my grandparents, and I should say great-grandparents in some cases, because 3 of my grandparents were born here, but all of my grandparents and great-grandparents were in America by the time the war happened. So I lost no family, no blood family in the Holocaust. Now, my one grandmother, whose story is fabulous, she grew up, her family fled Russia for China when she was 2, and she lived in China for 20 years. And she came to America by way of Japan, Hawaii, San Francisco, and across. And I wrote about her story in the Grand Central anthology. I sort of borrowed her story, but I didn't lose family in the Holocaust. Now, when I lived in Poland, I became extremely close to the elderly survivors who were still living in that part of the world. And so they were like grandparents to me as well.
Wow. I was chatting with a woman today whose grandparents also, you know, they were born around the time, let me see if I get the dates right. Anyway, they were born there, and her parents were born in DP camps, both of her parents in different camps. And anyway, she actually also had really interesting stories about, and I don't want to give anything away, but, you know, babies and, you know, having families in the Holocaust time and era and all this stuff. So anyway, I should put you guys in touch.
That would be amazing. That would be amazing.
So having lived through these characters' eyes, right, and all of it, the mom, the dad, the Lily, and I mean, everybody is Sadie. And what did you learn about the period that you, even though you've read 8 million things about it, I'm sure, and written and all this stuff and researched and met people, like, where did it take you that you hadn't expected?
Well, obviously, the sewer was kind of a revelation to me, but it wasn't just this sewer. It was, first of all, it brought together people who were from really different backgrounds, who didn't know each other above ground, right? And they're suddenly kind of living in this very cramped space. The detail of their lives, you know, that there were books, and, you know, how did they have light, and, you know, how did they celebrate, you know, the Sabbath, observe the Sabbath, and all of those things. But the other piece that I really took away from this was the man who helped them. So there was a fellow named, in real life, named Leopold. In my book, he's Pavel. And he was a sewer worker. And he was not a particularly honorable person. Like, he had been a thief before the war, but he met this family. And originally, he agreed to help for money. And then they ran out of money. And he still kept helping. And he and his wife would go to all these markets around the city to get food without attracting attention and just risk their own family. And he was a great hero. And after the war, he died not more than 2 years after the war, because he and his daughter were riding bikes and a truck came barreling toward them, and he pushed his young daughter out of the way to save her life. So even then, he was a hero. So it's these individual stories that are really so moving.
Oh my gosh. Do you already know what story you're going to work on next?
I am working on a new, I'm always working. So here's my rule. I don't let myself start a new book until one is finished, because it's like you can't play with that shiny new toy in the corner until you clean up your toys, right? That's very important. But I never take a break. I'm pretty much right back into it once I've got that idea. So I am working on a book inspired by a true story of the only known train sabotage of a train on the way to Auschwitz. So there was a train going from Belgium to Auschwitz that was sabotaged to try and rescue people. And so that's what I'm looking at fictitiously in my new book.
What happened in real life?
They did get some people off, but obviously there's great cost. And so my book looks at both the people who were on the train. And again, my characters are fictitious, but it's both people who are on the train and people who were engaged in the sabotage.
Well, Rachel in the chat is very excited about this.
So it's not going to be out till early 2023. And I'm going to be honest, that sounds really far away to you. And it sounds too close to me.
It's close. You gotta. You have to step up.
I'm trying to hustle. I'm hustling. 5 a.m. writer. 5 a.m. writing has become 4 a.m. writing. That's not a place I like to go.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, the fours are tough.
Right. It's a different. It's a crazy difference. I'm telling my kids, like, 5 is awesome, but 4 is terrible.
Yeah. It's a fine line. It's a fine line. Did you know the ending of this book before, at the beginning? Because like, I did not see the ending coming until the end.
So let me say this. I'm sure you've heard this.
Oh, someone just asked the question in the chat. I did not get that from the chat.
That's hilarious. Great minds. So here's the thing. You know this probably from other writers. There's these two types of writers, the plotters and the pantsers. And the plotters are the dear souls that write everything sequentially and they make it look nice before they move on. That's not me. I'm a pantser. I write by the seat of my pants. So I like throw words at a screen in a random order. It's terrible. But the reason I'm telling you this is I'm never sure if you say, like, did you know at the beginning what the ending is? There isn't really a beginning or ending for me. It kind of all happens at once. So it's very hard for me to go back chronologically and think about what I knew when. I often know an opening scene, and I often have some idea where I wind up at the end. And in between, there's like one or two scenes that I call high moments, and they're little lighthouses that kind of help me get along the way. So I probably knew how the book was going to end roughly, but maybe not who.
Got it.
Right? Okay.
So did you go back and write the prologue later?
I write a rough sketch of the prologue. I'll have like a rough sketch of the prologue. But if you read that prologue and you really don't know who is speaking per se, yep. I don't necessarily know that either. Right? I'm just throwing down those words. Someone once said that the plotters use scaffolding to build, but the pantsers, it's like an archaeological dig where you're picking up an object and like dusting it off and trying to see what's there. So that's how it works for me. It's sort of immersive in that way.
Interesting. I like it. Do you have any advice for aspiring authors?
So I do. I think there's kind of three things that are really key. One is discipline, right? And this probably goes to the moms not having time to read, right? So discipline is you know when your best writing time is and you really have to protect it very zealously. Because even after all these years, not my beloved mom or my sainted husband who's downstairs taking care of the puppy and the kids right now, nobody says, why don't you go take some writing time, right? People just don't say that to us in our lives. You have to like, and this is mine. And you have to do that a little bit and be flexible and pivot like we all did with COVID, right? So that's one piece, be disciplined. Second piece, be tenacious. And that goes back to that writing workshop and me knocking on the door for, you know, till it opened, because I think that makes a really huge difference. Even when lots of people said, why don't you give this up? It isn't going anywhere. The last piece is ability to revise. So this is where having been an attorney comes in helpful, because when you're an attorney, people like mark up your work and you have to fix it. And I think as a writer, if you can take that feedback from your editor, your agent, your trusted writers, you know, whoever you're getting feedback from, and make the changes in your own way, because often they don't give you solutions, they only give you problems and you have to figure out the solution. So think ability to revise.
I like it. Excellent. Yeah. Amazing. Well, thanks, Pam, for chatting. We're going to keep chatting with everybody here, but for the podcast portion, I'm going to turn it off and free you from that. So hold on. I'll say goodbye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week.
Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.